I'm Mary and I'm an alcoholic, and so I was just going to talk to you a little bit about my 5, 6, and 7 experience, my first time through. And what had happened for me is, like I was telling you earlier, that I went through the first 3 steps in treatment. And what happened for me is I started writing my 4th step, and I was told to write down everything I was going to take to my grave, and all my big secrets and all my big resentments. And I took that very seriously. I had this spiral notebook I was carrying around, and it would be in my handbag, and it would be under the seat of my car. And it was like, you know, I carried it around everywhere with me. And, you know, our big book talks about, you know, if we are to skip this step, you know, we can drink again. And I took that really seriously, like just writing it. But in the process of that, my sponsor had passed away, and so I was kind of left in this place with this new sponsor. And I was telling you earlier about my little brother that was living under the bridge, and he had come into the rooms of recovery. And I was like, man, I'm holding on to this 5th step, and I don't know who I'm going to share it with. And he had told me, you know, it was like, I don't know, we just get these little nuggets along the way that are just really helpful to us. And he had said something to me about, well, why don't you share it with Pastor Ron Slater? And there was this man, Ron Slater. He loved God, but he was never pushing it on anybody. He was going to treatment centers, and he was listening to lots of 5th steps. But he was also a very significant person in my life, where he showed me God's love, like God's hands and God's feet. He was always in my life. When I had lost my son to crib death, he walked me through that. When my husband and I got married, he had walked us through that. When my mom passed on, he had walked me through that, and he was just significant in my life. And so here I am sitting on this 5th step, and what had happened was, I was kind of going back, you know, back in the day, you know, 1989, there, and where I was raised, and my meeting maker makes it, you know, kind of mentality, 1, 2, 3. They used to call it the 1, 2, 3 dance, the 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And that's kind of what I was doing. And I'd been, you know, short on meetings. A friend of mine was getting married. I had gone to this bachelorette party that was just insane. And I'm kind of like just this dry drunk walking around. And what had happened to me is, I'm sitting at this reception, this wedding reception, and I'm literally sitting there at the table, and their book talks about the strange mental blank spot. I cannot for the life of me recall how a glass of champagne got in my hand, and I'm 1.5 years sober, and it was in my hand. It was in my hand and on its way to my mouth, and all of a sudden I came to. And the book talks about, we recoil from it like a hot flame. And I threw it on the table and I was out the door. And I'd scheduled this appointment with my pastor. And that's just really, if you have ever had the drink obsession come back on you, that is a very, very, very scary place to be. And that's where it was for me. So I make this appointment with Pastor Slater, and I have all these phone numbers of all these other women that I can call. You know, back then it was always these little chunks of paper that we'd have all these phone numbers. There's no cell phones or anything back in the day. And I had this appointment for him to show up my house at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that morning, the mind takes over again, and it's like, holy cow, how can I tell this man, my hero, my deepest, darkest, ugliest things in my life? And I'm going through all the phone numbers, and nobody's answering the phone, like a bunch of good alcoholic addicts, you know. Nobody's answering the phone, but he shows up at my door. And that experience was profound for me, in the fact that I sat there, and as I poured through those pages with this man sitting in front of me, and it was humiliating, and it was excruciating, like just the tears of pouring from my face, and I'm reading these pages to him. And one of the first things he said to me when I was completed, he goes, are you finished? And I said, yeah. And he goes, were you afraid I wasn't going to love you anymore? And I'll never forget that as long as I live. I was like, yeah. You know, and he goes, I love you more than I ever did. And that was beautiful to me. And immediately points out, you know, my 6 and 7, you know, here's your defects of character. Here's, I see your pride, and I see your ego, and I see your selfishness, and I see, you know, all these areas of my life. The quiet hour. Big believer in that quiet hour where we stop. And it's the only time in our big book where it talks about an hour alone with God, to look and see if our work is solid so far, the stones properly in place, have we made mortar without sand, you know, and him being able to take me through 6 and 7, and that same body of work. And as I moved through that work with him, I had lunch scheduled with my sponsor afterwards, and I can tell you that what I felt like I was a free woman at last. And we have promises with our fifth step. What page are those on, dear? I'm gonna find those. 75. Okay, cool. So we pocket our pride. I pocketed my pride, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of my past. So this is it. So once I've taken this step, withholding nothing, the promises of the fifth step, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. See, I was looking at my feet. I was always looking at my feet. I could never look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had a certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel like we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And so many times when I take other women through this work, you know, I'll share that a lot of, you know, my experience in this. So, you know, I've borrowed things from other people, you know, that when a woman shares a fifth step with me, you know, I'll sit them down right away and say, okay, tell me the absolute worst thing right off the, out of the gates. I've borrowed that from other people, and I kind of love that. Tell me the biggest secret that you weren't going to tell me that isn't on the pages. And most of the time they have something that they haven't written down. Okay, so you tell me the biggest, darkest, ugliest thing, and I can tell you I love you. And I'm telling you, I don't even know how many fifths. I've been in treatment centers and done the same thing that Pastor Ron did for me, to be able to, you know, to walk somebody else through this sacred, sacred, sacred process. That what you tell me is between you, me, and God. That what you tell me is going to help set you free. What you tell me is going to put you on this path to freedom, you know, to freedom, to be able to look the world in the eye, to be alone at perfect peace and ease, to feel like the drink problem has been removed. I mean, my God, who doesn't want those things in your life? And so, so I get to pay back others, you know, pay back to the people that were there for me and were able to walk me through that step, to be able to do that with other women today. And I'm going to share one more thing here. So we're returning home. We're having the hour. Are the stones properly in place? Or have we skimped on the cement into our foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we can look at step 6. Emphasize the willing and being indispensable. We're now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable. Can he now take them all, everyone? And I was so scared that if God's going to remove all these defects of character, I was going to become Mother Teresa and nobody would want to be around me, and that I'd be just like this super spiritual woman, and oh God, I don't want to be that perfect girl. I mean, what's that going to feel? I'm going to become everything that used to just drive me crazy about spiritual women. It's like, oh God, she's so perfect, I can't even talk to her anymore. And I thought I'd become that, you know. But what I had to do is I had to trust God that whatever he's going to remove, he can remove. And whatever, you know, I know that some of the character defects that I still walk around with today are just that God hasn't fully removed, that those defects actually keep me in need of God. It shows me that I need God, that, oh my God, I'm envious today. Oh my God, I'm jealous today. Oh my God, I'm this or whatever today. Those are the things that make me know or keep me alive to know how much I need God in my life. And that seven-step prayer, which I practice in my life every day, is this is my first step for life. This is how I'm going to show up to my fellows. Because what happens in step three is I'm going, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I'm going inward and I'm cleaning up the things. I'm gonna clean up these things that block me from the sunlight of the Spirit. And what step seven is doing is it's showing me, and our the 12 and 12 talks about this, that the step that separates the men from the boys. How am I showing up to life? How am I showing up to my fellow, you know, in my home, in my occupations, and all my affairs? How am I showing up for life? Because if I'm showing up as I'm just clean and sober, Marian, you know, then I'm full of pride and I'm full of ego and I'm full of all these things that my character defects represent. But this is the step that shows me how I'm going to show up in a meeting. How am I going to show up to my home? I like to say that I'm as sober as I am at home. That's always my gauge. How am I when I get home to Peter? If I walk in the door and I'm saying, hey, jerko, or, you know, or things like that, how am I showing up when nobody's looking? How am I showing up at the grocery store? You know, am I throwing a cigarette butt on the ground and then I'm going to the grocery store and I'm leaving the cart in the middle of the parking lot and I'm flipping somebody off when I'm going down the road and I'm going home and I'm being a jerk to him? Sorry, that's not sobriety to me. You know, that's not sobriety to me. I want to be a light and I want to be an example to the newcomers no matter where I go. And one of the things I always say to people is like, follow me. Follow me and tell me how I'm doing. I want to be, you know, there's chances in our life, there's places in our life, we can be the only big book that somebody sees. And if I'm showing up with all my character defects, like, flaming out of me, it's like, you know what? Who wants that? Who wants that in my life? I mean, who wants that for their life? What kind of example am I being to somebody else? So this step shows me how I'm going to be when I go out to the world. My Creator, I am now willing that you have all of me, good and bad. And I can think some stuff about me so darn good. Well, maybe it isn't, you know. But it's going to be up to God to decide what's good. And I can even think that something's really bad. But maybe it's not bad in God's eyes. Maybe it's good. And what he can do with some of those things that are my strongest defects is he can use those to be my assets. God can use those things to be my assets to help another woman. You know, I don't know what's good and I don't know what's bad. And one of the things I like to practice in my seven-step prayer is when it says, you know, when we're ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. And I will insert whatever defect of character I'm dealing with at any particular time. Because there's no, I've arrived. There's none of that, you know, that I'm just, you know, got unicorns flying out of my ears. You know, that doesn't happen in life. You know, we're always going to be this human condition, this human brokenness, and constant work that we need to do in our life. So I like to put those character defects right in there. And usually I do it in the swimming pool. It's like my little spiritual place to do my laps. And then I float. I have this thing I like to float, you know. And that's how I just kind of let go of my day. And I let go of, you know, whether I practice this in the morning or whether I practice it again in the evening or however many times I say it a day. Whatever character defects are just blocking me at any given time. Maybe I'm full of fear. Maybe I'm full of, you know, whatever it is. I just like to give those up to God, whatever God brings to mind for me. Which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. And I've now completed step 7. And so, yeah, my first step for life, that's what it becomes. How I'm going to show up to you.
I was hearing a fifth step one time, and this guy, I always had a nickname for him. I called him, where I come from, everyone gets a nickname. And I called him Joey Loopholes because he was always looking for a loophole and everything. And I'm listening to his fifth step, and he would say, "Let me explain, yeah, but. Let me explain, yeah, but." And I'm sitting in it with this guy, and I'm ripping my hair out. And I said, "We need to take a break, so I'm going to drink over his fifth step in a minute." I'm in my, I was living in Staten Island, New York at the time. We're sitting at the living room table and take a break, and I go into the bathroom, and I'm throwing cold water on my face like I was in doing a deposition or something. And I'm white as a ghost. I'm throwing cold water on my face, and I drop to my knees like, "God, keep me from throwing him out of my house. And just tell me what to do. I don't know what to do with this guy. I cannot crack this guy open. He can't see truth. It's yeah, but let me explain. Yeah, but let me explain." And I get nothing in return. God gives me nothing in return yet. And I go down, sit at the table, and I'm waiting for some intuitive thought. And there's nothing happening. And I lean forward, and what comes out of my mouth is what God gave me. I can't believe I said this. I said to him, I'll call him Joe. I said, "Joe, just read your fourth column to me, nothing else." I almost wanted to force the words back in my mouth because it was heresy. I'm going against what everyone tells me to do. You can't do this. I was so attached to methodology, no room for wiggle, if anything, something doesn't bend in the wind, it breaks. God's not attached to methodology, he doesn't need it. So I said, "Joe, just read the fourth column to me." And he looked at me. I said, "Just read the fourth column. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. Over and over, turn the page. Over and over, turn the page." You know what? As he's doing this, he didn't say once, "Let me explain, yeah, but." He keeps reading fourth column, fourth column, fourth column, fourth column. And then something happened that I always try to explain, and I can't. But if you could, figuratively speaking, imagine a guy splitting open and shedding the old skin, and what emerges are bright, God-filled eyes. Color back in this guy's face. And I'm watching this. I'm saying, what I do is I always tell people, "You finally showed up. You've been sitting in front of me for 2 months, and you finally got here," which meant the eyes went on, the windows to the soul. They showed up. And he was sitting at my table. I couldn't believe what I just witnessed. And we continue that way. Well, this guy had such a transformation where before this, he would never show up to a meeting with the big book and wouldn't even share. Now he started showing up at meetings with a big book, every meeting he went to with a big book under his arm, sponsoring a ton of guys out there, getting asked to speak regularly and sharing about his experience from this book. He had his own like following. He was doing, his work changed, his relationship changed, his other addictions changed, because other addictions besides alcohol, everything changed. And what he did to continue that process, where we're going to go in a second, is finished his amends. And when we start making amends and finally complete the amends that we're currently aware of, it hooks up this train to the locomotive. We can have a train with beautiful cabin cars, newly furnished, beautiful beds in the cabins. It can look wonderful, but it's sitting in the train station. When we begin to complete amends, it hooks up to the engine and starts to roll, and we begin to enter the world of the spirit. That's what happened to this guy, and I still can't believe I did that. But I did, and it was given to me because I didn't see that anywhere. In fact, it was up to me. I would never do that. But God could and would if he saw it. And God has an interesting way of bringing the truth around. And, you know, how often do you pray to God for help, and the help that he sends is not what you were praying for? Mm-hmm. It's a little different than what you planned on, huh? So 6 and 7, you know, just to know if I can't work on my defects. And if I try dealing with my defects, I will find how quickly they deal with me. So it's a surrender, another surrender in 6 and 7. And I have no idea what God's going to do with me, but we do complete that body work, as Marion said, with an amen. When we look at the 7-step prayer, it parallels our 3rd-step prayer. And there's an amen at the end of it, which means I'm done for now with this interior work. And we're about to go out and repair the damage that I've caused. And we make a list in 8. Most of it came from step 4. And in step 8 and 9, twice they remind us about going to any lengths for this spiritual experience.
Can I just throw one more
Please.
Thing in there?
Yeah, go ahead.
We get in the rooms, in these rooms, we get as Alcoholics and Addicts a do-over. You know, and for me, the profound thing through the first time through is the woman I was when I drank and I drugged is not the woman I am today. You can have such a spiritual transformation. It's like a shedding of skin, a shedding of the old self, that I don't know who that was. I mean, like, I can look back at that and go, whoa, but that is not who I am today. That you can go in so deep and you can have such a profound change that the woman I was and the woman I am today, like all of us, we can have that much of an experience mm-hmm. with that.
So if I don't want my biography to become my destiny, I stop making amends. And in making amends, we'll see how we'll bring death to defects of character. We start to really, we begin to the walk of entering the world of the Spirit, where that's the guarantee of the spiritual awakening, and we're no longer the same. We've shed a lot of skin, a lot of pruning of the tree. So we take a look at this list, and we make a list of people, institutions, principles, everything on this list of people I owe amends to repair, not an I'm sorry. I've done tons of those. And I pray for willingness to go to every single person on that list, whether they're gangsters, drug dealers, pimps, prostitutes, bankers, lawyers, I don't care. My job is to go to the Father and ask him for the willingness to complete this amends. And step 9 will tell me, except when to do so would injure them or others. It's really important I seek counsel with the sponsor before I rush out. And remember that God's timing is perfect and mine is not. So step 8 is about getting the list and praying for willingness to go see these people. It's really interesting. Dr. Bob completed amends and never drank again, and prior to that couldn't get sober. And anyone I've ever spoken to, when we complete the outstanding amends that we're currently aware of, except when to do so to injure them or others, which means I'm not going to knock on someone's door and cause more harm. Something changes internally for us. And the amends that we can't make directly, there's a way of making those amends, what we like to call indirectly. If I was selfish with women, I think you guys know what we're referring to. How do I go back to some of those women who might be married now? Can't knock on the door and say, hey, remember me? Remember that night in July? You can't do that. And I probably can't even send them a letter, or nowadays with social media, even send them a message, because they may have a significant other who's exposed to that stuff and says, who's this? That's really unfair. I can't do that. But what I can do, and I'm speaking as from a man's point of view, is treat women with dignity and respect in and out of AA. And thank the good Lord, there may be lots of things said about me. I know there's one circuit speaker out there that's trying to bury me regularly. Shame on him. So people can say things about me, but they can't say one thing unless they're lying, that I've been disrespectful or taken advantage of females in the rooms ever. And that's because of God. And that was my way of cleaning up the past to certain women I could not go to because they've gotten on with their lives. And when I do sit with someone, it's not my job to drag you through the mud. Anyone, for that matter. I'm clear on my harm's caused, and if they're not ready to hear it, then I can't force myself upon them. How would I want to be approached if the shoe is on the other foot? But I'm there, and I'm willing, I let them know what I'm clear on, and I'm delicate. And if it requires kid gloves, I will do that if they're willing to listen. What can I do to make this right? And not often do I get to say this, because it's usually done a lot quicker than I thought. Our book says 9 out of 10 times the unexpected happens. So many people say, oh man, I don't even know what you're talking about. When did this happen? Or don't worry about it, it's water under the bridge. Well, anything you need to tell me. That happened one time with a guy, and I didn't even get out that question, because he began to tell me what he thought of me and my amends. And I listened to it. I absorbed a little bit of heat. Now, we're not to be servile or scraping before anyone. We're not there to be stepped on by anyone. But we can take a little heat if someone has to vent. It's a small price to pay for freedom and a small payback for some of that nonsense I cause in other people's lives. So if someone says, you know, I don't think much of you, you robbed me forever, and I really wish you wouldn't show up anymore, take your big book and stick it, I can handle that. Mm-hmm. I can handle that. That might be their price for freedom. How do I know? My job is not to say, yeah, but if you didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that, or let me explain. It's not my job. My job is to clean up the wreckage of my past, including, this is incredible, in step four, I'm writing resentment towards Joe and all the terrible things, all the things I'm really angry with him about. And in step nine, I'm going back to Joe, hat in hand, and making amends to him. Talk about a shift and a flip. And some of these people I went to in my inventory, I despised them like a landlord that I had. How to approach the man we hated will arise. That man I hated was in my 8-step list, and I wasn't going. I wrote more inventory, more prayer, more forgiveness, more inventory, more prayer, more forgiveness, and one day showed up at his house, and I had the most difficult ones, our book says, seem to be the most beneficial. I forget the exact language. I had a life-changing experience out of this amends that I was not going to, because I still hated this man. So we can talk about mechanics, but experientially, what does this look like? The life-changing experience. And giving back for the first time and being selfless rather than it's always about me. And I'm just going to share one story with you that the most current one that it happened a few years ago, a few years ago going through the work that completely changed my life again. So I'm a Catholic, and my mom took me to all the communion and confirmation stuff. And when we prayed to Jesus, and Jesus loves you, and all things are possible. That's all good. I said earlier when I was using, I never lost sight of him, but I thought there was a God out there who had me in his crosshairs, and I'm doomed. And I argued with Jesus, I bargained with him, and so on. But he was never non-existent. But my church community, I had lots of problems with. And I watched a lot of the headlines about some people who should have never been priests. They should have been in jail doing terrible things for years. And I used a little microcosm of that as wholesale condemnation against the whole Catholic community. Like I was some good guy. And so when I get sober, I would go to mass services and not go and go to mass service. I'd streak on it. But I always from the get-go would go to church, not mass service, and light these two candles, sick and suffering one, sick and suffering in that room is one for my mom, make some prayer and go. But I had this thing going on. When I would sit in the church service, I would look around and critique people. Well, I don't really agree with the priest too much, or they're singing too much, and there's too much aerobics, Neil sits down, I'm working out, this is, you know, all this stuff. So I'm doing inventory with my sponsor, Mickey. The first time through the work with him. And here it is again, institutions, resentment, Catholic Church, blah, 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 blah. Go on to the third, go on to the fourth. And he stops me. And he says, back up. How long has this one been going on for? And I immediately justify the resentment. To which he ripped me apart into a million pieces. First, that I thought I had the luxury of sitting on a resentment that long and justifying it. And second, how dare I condemn the whole community for my viewpoints and a few bad apples. It would be like coming to an AA meeting And the speaker gets up there and is drunk. And I walk away saying, AA, they're all drunk in AA. How unfair. Right? So I complete the work with him, and the 8-step list has the Catholic Church. And he says, you need to go make amends. You're going to go sit with the priest. We have something called confession. He's going to go sit with the priest in a confession and talk to him about this and make amends. So I did. And one Saturday afternoon, they have two confession services. I walk into the booth, I kneel down, and I sit with the priest. And I tell him, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is what I've been doing, this is where I've been. And as God would have it, he understood, as I understand. Usually when they do this, they just ask anything else. Unless you ask them a direct question, they don't sit in judgment on that. But he said to me, I understand. And we talked a little bit, which is very unusual in this kind of setting, unless it's a face-to-face, usually behind a screen. I said, what can I do to make it right? He gave me absolution. And he says, can you come to a mass service tomorrow morning, Sunday? And so I did. Purely out of making amends. And Marion escorted me there. And as we're walking in, 10:30 mass, the bells are going off, and I can feel that thing in the chest. A good thing. My heart is beating. I got this whole thing going on. Never happened to me before. Made sure I told Marion, she wanted to suffer. I was, no, we're sitting in the back row. I'm not sitting up front because I didn't feel worthy to be up there. I sat in the back row like when I first came to AA. And I knew some of the, you know, the service. I'd been to mass before. Then do the Lord's Prayer. It was kind of like we do the Lord's Prayer. Everyone has their hands up and they're singing the Lord's Prayer, and here it comes. My eyes are watering, and I'm embarrassed to look at Marion to see, you know, me crying, but my eyes are watering, and I'm starting to weep, and they were tears of joy. I was home. When we left Mass, it was incredible because the bells are going, people are coming out, and it was, I didn't critique anyone. I said, we're all in this thing together. How cool is this? And I was even more in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I fell in love with my church. I fell in love with the priest. I fell in love with the whole thing. Fast forward, I was asked what I do now on a Sunday, the most sacred place for me to be. I stand on the altar with I'm a lector and a Eucharistic minister. I serve communion in my Catholic church now. And I how dark I had been, what a hypocrite I was, how dark it is before the dawn, and how free I've gotten out of the 9-step work, out of the 12-step work, out of going to make direct amends, that I would have missed this type of opportunity if I would have pulled the plug too soon. And if I can't get to my service because I'm on the road, I'll get to a later service. We just moved down to Fort Lauderdale, and we have a church that you can walk to. So like tomorrow, we'll probably go to a 5:30 mass. So I'm just a parishioner. But usually on Sundays, I'm in Deerfield Beach at my church, and I'm doing, you know, participating in that way. And it's the coolest thing I've ever experienced. And Marion does service for the church. So we walk in as a couple, a recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will tell you, over the last few years, being in the back room and putting the gowns on to go out for service, the lectors in there, they all have addiction and alcoholism in their families. And you know who's the point person back there? Me. They ask questions about addiction. They ask questions about 12-step fellows. They ask questions about meditation. They ask questions, what should we do? How do we do this? How do we help our son, our nephew, our niece, our aunt, whatever it is? You see that? I couldn't see that back then, though. It's an incredible experience what happens when we're completing our amends. Completed our amends, which means everything on the list we've done. And not made a few and rested on our laurels. When we're all in, incredible miracles like this get to happen. Now, to someone sitting here, or maybe another Amy, that's not really much of a big story to you. To me, it's front page news because it changed my life. I cannot fathom, as I talk to you now, missing a mass service regularly. I don't know how I can live that way. without going to my Father's house and practicing fidelity to my God and shouting his name from the rooftops in AA. Because when we study our AA history, they got their information out of this, some of it, and they talk freely about it. You better get to this. And the 11th step, it talks about this stuff. And somehow in some of our new 12-step fellowships, don't even bring it up. And here's my consideration. What time we go to break?
10
up. Here's a consideration. And I'm not trying to ruffle feathers, but yes, I am.
He's a feather ruffler.
Listen, let's just to put this out there for what it's worth. You can do whatever you want. But I'm here to speak truth because you asked me to share. And this is my truth. Let's use Tarek. Tarek comes to my house every single day, right, and wakes me up. Wakes me up, and the bed I'm waking up in, and the house that I'm living in, he gave me. He gave to me. And he says, time to eat and go to work, and the food I'm eating, and the job I have, he gave me. And I go into my closet, and I got some clothes, he gave me. I'm going to drive to work in a car, he gave me. And I have money in the bank, he gave me. And I'm fairly healthy, clean, and sober, he gave me. I have some dignity, I have some integrity today, he gave me. And I run around the room saying, but for the grace of Tarek. This guy, I love him. He's done so much for me. He gave me my health. He gave me a job. He gave me food. He gave me money. And when I screw up, he always tells me, I love you. You're forgiving. Don't worry about it, man. It's going to be okay. Every single day, regardless of the weather, he's always present. And I'm telling you what a great guy this guy Tarek is. Doing this for years. Then one day he calls me. He says, would you do me a favor? I'm having a barbecue at my house, little get together, a bunch of friends, Sunday. Can you come over Sunday? Just come by for an hour. Can you do that? Just 1 hour, I promise you, 1 hour you'll be out the door. And I say, who's going to be there? And he tells me, Joe, Frank, Mary, and Bess. I don't like that. I'll catch up to you. I'll make it up to you. He's okay. A couple of months goes by, and he says, hey, I'm having another get together. Can you come by my house Sunday? 1 hour. Just 1 hour, man. Come by. It'll mean a lot to me if you come by my house for an hour. And I blow it off again. Meanwhile, I'm praising him. Would we consider that person a friend if they keep blowing us off? You know, think about it. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, we go to Narcotics Anonymous, whatever anonymous you belong to. And very often we talk about the grace of God, how much we love God. I love God. He's done so much. Gives me my sobriety. Goes on and on and on about this wonderful power called God. When was the last time any of us went to his house for an hour regularly and said, thank you? I didn't plug in this morning to a 9-volt battery to breathe for the rest of the day. And I didn't plug into a 9-volt battery to get my heart going. I don't do some mumbo-jumbo voodoo in the back room to keep me sober today. But somebody woke me up around 5 a.m. before my phone went off, wake me up, make sure I get here on time. Kept me breathing through the night, kept my heart beating through the night because it wasn't time to go home to him. And gave me zero desire to pick up a drink or a drug. And be able to do this for a few hours today, to give a talk tonight, and hopefully get home safe tomorrow. It gives me some integrity and dignity and some grace, fidelity in my relationship, and a member of a 12-step fellowship. On my best day, don't pull that off. On Sunday, when I get home early afternoon, I'm too tired to go to a 5:30 service for 1 hour and say, thanks. Who's the hypocrite? Me. And here's another thing to consider. Let's use you. You're speaking Sunday morning. It's a 2-hour drive. It's a big group anniversary. 400 people are going to be there. You're the keynote speaker. It's a 7 a.m. meeting. Road trip. You got to get up really early, take a bunch of the ladies, because you're speaking. Nothing's getting in the way of that long drive, because you're speaking. Of course I'm going to go. Because my 12-step fellowship hinges on every word I say. The following Sunday morning, at noontime, I can't get to my service for 1 hour. Noontime. Because I'm busy mowing the lawn or just watching, doing this on Facebook. I'm very busy. That makes sense? We'll take a break.